We are live. Max, you disappeared there for a second, and this got even better, but now you're back, unfortunately.
Nah, well, can't win them all.
Welcome back to the Train Smart Podcast with Velox Training Group. I am the lead instructor and host of Velox Training Group, and here we've got Max. Max is our co-host and assistant instructor with Velox Training Group. It is just Max and I tonight. We've got some pretty neat things to talk about. And I feel like the topic should be, okay, so maybe you want to take a class, or maybe you just signed up for a class, and maybe it's your first class, and you don't know what to take. Maybe it's just an all-pistol class. Maybe it's pistol rifle, whatever, long-distance rifle. So I wanted to dive into, like, some of the gear-specific things, and I think this would be pretty informative because, dude, like, real talk, I have a gazillion things that I spent money on, and like, I did not need to spend money on that one thing. Like, I should have, and like, instead of buying maybe like three or four things trying to fit this one bill, right? Like, instead of doing that, like, I should have just bought this one freaking thing, and it would have made life like considerably easier. So I think like the first thing that comes to mind to me, believe it or not, is Pelican cases. I can count six cases, like, right off the top of my head, like, sitting there in the garage. And I was actually talking to my wife about these things earlier. I was like, I have got to get rid of some of these damn cases. It's like, I would buy it thinking, like, oh, this is the one, right? And then one or two things, it was like, no, this is not the ticket, man. Whether it was too heavy for the airplane, and I have to pay, you know, oversized baggage, whatever. So start off with you, like, what is the go-to case? Say you're taking, whatever, maybe it's a two-day pistol, maybe it's a pistol rifle. Like, what's your go-to case, whether you're driving, flying, whatever? Because you do need some sort of case if you're going to even drive to a class.
Yes. So say if I'm taking a rifle, I'll take my big Pelican. Now I got to look and see what... Pelican IM3200.
Okay.
It's just the long rifle case. But what I'll tell you, because I did the thing where I got it, and then I very carefully cut out the outline of the rifle that I wanted to go in it, and cut out little storage pockets, and I thought I was being really clever.
And then you quickly got rid of that rifle, and now nothing fits.
Yes, right. Or change the optic, or change something on it, or wanted to take a different rifle. So I yanked everything out. I run a piece of foam at the bottom. I run a ring of foam around the outside, and I run a piece of foam at the top. And then I just jam it full of shit. So like, if I don't, especially if I'm flying, right? If I don't fill it up with ammo and guns and stuff, I'll just pack underwear in there. Like,
I do the same thing. So I typically put my dirty clothes in the gun box.
Hey, good luck sorting through this, TSA.
There's a couple reasons, but like, that's the main one. Like, hey, if you want to like dig through all of my stuff, well, you might need some rubber gloves, because now there's like dirty socks and crap in here. Yeah. So
sorry for you.
Good luck.
So like, I like that case. It's probably not the lightest. It's probably, you know, I don't know. It has worked, and I beat the ever living shit out of it, and it's helped. Held together, the clasps have held together. The locking points are seeing, like, they may be on their last airline journey.
Yep.
Because that seems to be the weak point for me, especially on that case. It doesn't have the metal like reinforced lock points, so if I was going to buy another one, that's what I'd do. And then my pistol case is the same way. If I take a pistol class, like, I flew this to Texas. I don't even know. I guess I don't even have a sticker on it anymore. I think I probably got it secondhand from some, you know, I don't know, surplus store or something like that. But I do the same thing with this. It's just foam on the bottom, foam on the top, foam around the outside, and then I just load it full of stuff. But like, I want to be able to get everything for a class in the case. Ear Pro, mags, rangefinder, iPro, everything in the one case. And then that just is what goes with me wherever I go. And then maybe some underwear.
I agree. Okay. So I've gone through a bunch of different cases here. I started off with like the big, long, skinny pelican that's like made for rifles, right? The issue that I found with that, especially for flying, is as soon as TSA sees a rifle case, they want to go in it, right? If it looks like, and it doesn't even, like, it could be just a smaller case, and maybe you have, you know, your rifle, like, taken down, and it doesn't look like a rifle case. For whatever reason, man, I had the worst luck with long rifle cases. It's like, they see it, and they're like, yep, we're going in there, which to me is just like, hey, I've gotten used to it, right? Because everyone digs through all of my crap in airports, but it's kind of like, this is just annoying that like this happens every time.
I think the other piece of that is in Charlotte in particular.
Yep.
My guns have ridden around the fucking carousel for like 45 minutes while I was waiting at the oversized baggage claim.
Yep.
And it's, you know, $10,000 worth of guns and stuff just riding around in what is very obviously a gun case. So
yes.
Yeah, there's some wisdom to it not looking like a gun.
Yes. I've had the exact same thing happen in several different airports. I believe Burbank, California, just shit it out on the carousel. Las Vegas typically shits it out on the carousel. It just depends on the airport, man, like that happens. So, like that big, long rifle case, it looks like a rifle case. The other thing that I hated about those is it requires four locks for the most part, right? At least the one that I had four locks. And if you just put two on it and they see holes for like more locks and you don't have them, like they just hassle you about it. So like what I've gone with here lately is a 1615 Air from Pelican. The neat thing about the Air, you could look up all the dimensions and all this stuff online and actually how much it weighs. But the neat thing about the Air is it's a whole lot lighter. So if you're going to get on an airplane with rifle, pistol, you know, magazines, a little bit of ammo, we could actually touch on how I fly with that and here in a second. But like, you need a lighter case, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, like most of the time, if you go over 50 pounds, you're going to pay an oversized baggage fee. I mean, unless you've made like status or something with like Delta or whatever. Yes. So I think I can get up to 70 pounds now without.
Yeah.
And I definitely have used that. Real quick on the ammo thing. Usually what I do with the ammo, because you're usually only allowed 11 pounds. What typically works like 99% of the time, I take the ammo, I put it in my clothes bag, and I check my clothes bag. And when they say, do you have any ammo? I say, no. It's not like you have to declare ammo, but you do have to declare firearms. So like I've traveled 800-900 rounds, chuck that in the clothes bag and check it. And I have locks on that and off you go. Now, I'm not saying take that advice. I'm just saying that's what I do personally. And I travel on airplanes quite a bit. But getting back to the case, the 1615 Air case, I've got the yellow Pelican dividers. Guys that are listening can also look this up. Do not buy them on the Pelican site because they are ungodly expensive. I just went on eBay and I think they were like $60. And the neat thing about those is it's modular. You can configure your box however you want. So, you know, how I typically do it is I'll have a long section in the back because I will take rifles apart, put the upper and lower right next to each other. That's where the rifles go. Up front, I've got basically a piece of styrofoam wedged in there that has cutouts for pistols. I think I actually bought that on the Seahorse website. And I like took a sawzall, chopped it up, like made it work. Like it's perfect for the Pelican box now. The neat thing that I like about that is when TSA opens the box, they go, there they are. Right. Whereas before, like I was putting them in DACA pouches and then they're like opening the DACA pouch. And like I find like the more they dig, like the worse it gets because they're like they just don't know what they're looking at. And so they're digging around and all these questions are popping up in their head. What is this? Is he allowed to have it? So like just like the pistols being right there and they go, hey, is there any other guns? I just no, right there. Like, here you go. You can just they don't need to know that anyway. So that's super cool. The other really neat thing that I got from Amazon is the lid organizer. It bolts up with like four different screws. It's super cool. Does everyone need it? Probably not. But like for the stuff I'm doing where I travel with like several different shot timers and like sunblock and like whatever, like I have all this stuff that I need in there for like teaching classes. But the lid organizer does come in super freaking handy, just because like everything has its own pouch. But the 1615 Air from Pelican has been like the legit go-to. The other one that I've recently played around with is the Magpul one. And cool thing about the Magpul one is you can get the DACA grid. If you guys haven't seen the DACA grid, it's essentially like styrofoam that has blocks cut out of it. And then it comes with blocks and you can configure it however you want. So it's like super modular. So like Max was saying before, like, hey, I cut out the styrofoam and it only fit that one freaking gun. And maybe he changed the configuration. It's like now he's hosed, right? Well, with the DACA, I think they call it the grid, maybe the DACA grid. I'm probably like butchering this.
We're not sponsored.
They can go on the Magpul website and take a look. But like you can configure the box however you see fit. They also have like little tackle box things that sit down in the grid and it holds it really tight. I would say the only downfall of the DACA case is it's heavy. I think it's like I weigh everything because I fly a whole lot. I think it's like 23 or 24 pounds right out of the gate. Which, just being honest, like for me, with the amount of stuff that I take, it kind of X's it out for me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, a lot of the time I'm trying to take like two pistols, two rifles, or at least an extra upper, right? Just in case something breaks. That's another thing that I would recommend. Like, hey, you signed up for a class, right? If you have the means to bring two pistols, two rifles, I would highly recommend it, especially rifles. Max, I know you've seen this in classes too. Like pistol class, typically nothing breaks. Every now and then a red dot comes loose, right? Maybe something, you know, kind of off the wall breaks on a pistol, whatever. It's not very common. A rifle class, I probably see one broken rifle per class.
Yeah. It's always something. I mean, you'll get like the only time we really see, and I hate to even say it out loud, but the only time we really see problems with pistol classes is when people are experimenting with new things on their gun, like they just slapped a comp on it or they just threw a new trigger in it or something like that. But otherwise, it's exceedingly rare. Mm-hmm. But I mean, rifles are a disaster. They're a disaster.
Yes. Well, and it's usually, you know, kind of like you said with the pistols, right? Like the Franken guns. Like, hey, I put this shit together in my basement. And while that might be cool, you know, when you're out with the homeboys at the range and, you know, there's five of you and you fire 300-400 rounds over 5-6 hours, that might be cool. But like when we shoot, you know, just take, for instance, the first half of our class where we shoot practical accuracy in doubles. Those guns are getting hot. And they are getting used like very, very hard, like immediately. So I would not recommend building any of your own stuff. So like maybe we should talk about like, okay, regular rifle class, right? Say carbine class for you. Okay. Maybe we're shooting 100 yards and in. What is the exact setup that you're going to take?
It's easy. I got it right here. So like I've got Gucci Ur guns. Like I've got my Hodge back there that has all the stuff on it. And I shoot the ever living shit out of that gun. But it weighs a ton. It has stuff on there that I don't need in a class that doesn't help me shoot, you know, the things that I need to shoot in a class any better. So, I grabbed this Modern Material 14.5-inch upper, probably about a year ago. Well, it was right after ORD. Last year. So about a year ago. Because frankly, they were shooting these guns in the helicopter. And I don't know how many hundreds of people flew in that helicopter and shot thousands of rounds through those guns. And they were still shooting lights out.
Like, they got that's as good an ad of those things.
I mean, they were gross by the time we got them, and they were still hammering. That was as good an ad as I could ask for. So it's got bare minimum. It's got a optic and a sling, and I put a light on it because I want to have, like, that's an index point that I have on other guns. So it's important to me to make sure that, you know, if I'm smashing a reload, I'm not putting my hand somewhere where on other guns I can't index the gun. But otherwise, it's as bare bones as it can be, because I don't need to be screwing with all that other stuff in a class. I don't want to be toting it around. I don't want it to be breaking. And none of it changes how I shoot the gun, right? I'm not going to hold on to the gun different. I'm not going to shoulder the gun different because it has a laser on it. So there's no reason for me to have it. The only other things I've added to it are the Parker Mountain Machine BCD. Is that what he calls them?
Mm-hmm. BCD lever.
Which is, I mean, you and I have talked about it. I had the old bad levers, the Magpul bad levers way back in the day, and you bullied me out of them. And then it kind of came back around, right? Like I retaught myself how to find the bolt release with my thumb. But I've come back around on them for a bunch of reasons. But, you know, not much. It is important to note, because we've talked about it before, I have three prongs on pretty much every, I don't know if you can see it, but I have three prongs on every rifle, except for this like quasi precision build that I'm putting together. But I shouldn't call it a build. That's a URGI off the shelf, because I'm with you. Lowers, yep. I don't have as big a problem with building.
Yep.
Uppers.
Yeah, no.
Big no-no. I've had one. I've built a lot, and I've had one that was decently accurate.
Yeah. Well, you know, like, most dudes, like, just being a dude, like, we could watch a John Wayne movie, and we're a fucking cowboy, right? And here's the deal. Like, you might be able to build a halfway decent deck off the back of your house. That does not mean that you could build, like, a hard-use rifle, right? There's tolerance stacking in these things. Like, I wouldn't recommend it. I see far too many of these things break. And there's little intricacies in regards to, like, how they should be built that, like, if you miss them, well, you know, maybe the first morning shooting a bunch of doubles or group shooting, like, that thing might break. So, like,
that's right.
Highly, highly not recommended.
I mean, I can hammer in a roll pin for a, you know, trigger group, but heat fitting a barrel, I'm never going to get that right.
I've done that one time. I will never do that ever again. I was like, as soon as I started doing this, I was like, nope. Like, you shoot guns in dirt pits and you used to use a hammer for a living. Like, this is not your forte right here. Like, this takes, this takes some finesse. I would agree with you for rifle setup. I think, like, the one that I typically recommend to people the most would look exactly like yours, right? Where you have a three prong, maybe you have a flashlight, maybe you don't. But coming back from there, like, you've got a regular red dot, which is like what a SIG dot, right? Those are great.
The, like, Romeo 4XT Pro.
Yeah, super long battery life. That thing's pretty damn bulletproof, at least from what I've seen. Like, that rifle right there is what the majority of people need. The thing about the muzzle device, when we're looking at rifles, you could completely delete, and this is just my opinion, by the way, you could completely delete recoil with a muzzle device. Okay? Like, you can make it to where, like, the gun just goes bang and it doesn't do anything, right? What are your thoughts on training with something like that? Because I know, like, I've done it. You've done it. Maybe in the last, I don't know, year and a half or so, I've started to steer away from that. And I put three prongs on everything as well. So, like, what are your thoughts on, like, training with a muzzle device?
I have a gun. I have a 10.5 that has a 3-port brake on it. And even for a 10.5 gun, it doesn't move, right? I mean, it doesn't recoil. But I end up getting super, super, super lazy. And what that means for me is I end up not giving the gun what it needs because I know it's not going to recoil. So I hear the argument about I want to train to the hard stuff and then the easy stuff will be easy. And it's absolutely true. There's no reason to give yourself training wheels. But, sure. You know, on the other side of that coin is, you know, I want to make it as easy as possible. But what I find for me, for my shooting, is if I take out the recoil, I end up getting lazy with the pressure that I'm putting on the gun. I end up getting lazy with how I'm shouldering the gun. And so then when I start doing transitions or I really pick up the pace, stuff starts to fall apart because I know that I'm not having to give the gun what I need to give it to control recoil. That said, a three prong, just, it's not like it's a 5.56 gun. It doesn't recoil that much.
Exactly.
So I don't know that the juice is really worth the squeeze. I can delete the recoil on a rifle with a three prong on it just by putting my ass behind the gun. I don't need the three to delete it. The other thing that I've seen, particularly in the last few years, as I've gotten a lot better and more aggressive and shot rifles a lot more, is anything that has any sort of directional blast. So up, down.
Yep.
Since I'm putting my ass into the gun, it isn't fighting recoil. It's fighting me. And it'll dive the gun, and I have to pull the gun back up. So anything with directional recoil in it,
I hate it,
goes in the trash for me.
Yep. I'm the exact same. So the directional stuff for me. So, you know, if you're used to training with a pistol, right? Take pistol, for instance, and you're used to seeing a dot kind of lift. It goes wherever. Maybe it goes to 12. Maybe it goes to 1, 2, whatever. And then comes back down to the exact same spot. But when you're doing things not correctly, right? Maybe you have a bunch of hand tension, the dot lifts, and then you put a bunch of firing hand tension into it, and then the dot goes below the spot and then comes back up. That typically is like a really, really bad thing. That's the same thing that I experience when I put on something like a war comp. Yeah. And I'm like, I have really focused on like, hey, is that me that's doing that? Or is that like the comp that's doing that? Press the trigger, like try not to hold the gun, press the trigger. Like, so I'm trying not to put input into it. Gun goes off and dips down. The other thing that I see do that, unfortunately, is a A2 flash hider. And it seems like the better you figure out how to mount the gun, like the worse off you are when you have some sort of directional muzzle device on it. Could you get used to it? Yeah, sure. But I don't think it's a good idea. The main reason that I personally like the three-prong flash hider is it's not doing anything for you in regards to returning the gun, number one. Number two, it's making the gun behave just enough in that, like, the opposite direction. Like, it's going to move. And it's going to move just enough for you to be able to figure out, like, how to mount that gun and how to actually start doing things like mitigating recoil, making the gun, you know, recoil in like a very predictable way. Like, how do I mount the gun to where I can like bang on the trigger for as long as I want to or need to, and the gun doesn't move off the target? This is all stuff that I find would be very difficult to learn with a muzzle brake on or some sort of device that just completely deletes recoil. Because again, like, the gun just doesn't move. The gun doesn't give you enough input with all of that stuff on there. But like, hey, freaking three prong, dude, it will give you just enough where it's like, oh, okay, when I mount the gun like this, you know, this happens. Or when I pull with this hand, this happens. Like, it's very easy to see, if you're looking for it, what the gun does with a three prong flash hider. I find it to be super educational. That's why, like, if people are like, hey, what should I put on here? Because I'm going to go take a bunch of classes. Dude, put a freaking three prong on it. And then, like, if you want to go shoot three guns, something like that, by all means, put a muzzle brake on it. I probably would too.
Well, and that's so there. We got back to the name of the podcast. I mean, we're talking about training, right? Like, if I'm going to go shoot a competition, I'm probably going to shoot my gun that has a big ass break on it. Not a comp, but a break on it.
Yep. I agree.
Hell, if I was in a gunfight in the street, not in my house, because I value my eardrums, I'd probably want something with a big ass break on it. But if I'm talking about training, to your exact point, like, I want to make sure that I'm actually giving the rifle what it needs, and I'm not going to get that from a break. So,
yes.
And yeah, I mean, there is a fair point to be made that, like, shooting a break inside is a disaster, and it's also just a dick move. We talked with a lot of people about it, but like, if we're talking about going to a class, I get kind of grumpy with people who show up to classes with big ass breaks on their guns.
I do too.
Like, I don't need you to show up with a can. It's fine. We're going to shoot a shitload of rounds. I don't want you to destroy your can in a class, but like, I get a little butt hurt when there's the like two or three guys in a line shooting a big ass break. Cause it makes it miserable for the guy next to him, who's not going to get the training that he wants to get. Like, it's just kind of a dick move.
Yes. And like you say, inside of a house, it completely sucks. I don't know about you, but I've shot inside of my house. I live out in the sticks. So like, I'm not saying that everyone should do this, but like, I've had steel targets outside of my house, and I've shot inside of my house with a muzzle brake. And dude, it is bananas how like crazy it is. Like, it shakes the entire house. Not good. Let's talk about optics. What are some things that people should be looking for? They're going to a class. They're going to take their rifle with them. What should they be looking for? Like, say it's the same exact type of thing, right? Class, 100 yards and in. Should they bring that Night Force scope that's right behind you?
So here's what my first answer will be. Whatever you bring, zero it before you go to class.
Yes.
I mean, and even if it's not a perfect zero, at least you're going to be on paper.
No. Here's the thing with zero.
That's perfect fucking
this,
zero.
This really gripes my ass, because people would be like, I think it's good enough. And it's like, no. If there's like 100 clicks on the turret, only one of those bitches is right. 99 of those motherfuckers are wrong. So like, you need to find the one click on each of those turrets that is correct, right? There's no like, I think it's close. It's like, nope. No, that's not zero. Not
right.
Right. See, zero, it's not. All the time, like, well, shooting doubles, whatever, at 50, and they're like, oh man, I don't think this thing's zero. It's like, you're making the investment to come to a class, come with a properly zeroed gun. Go ahead.
Well,
sorry.
At that point, can you really tell me you're not zeroed? Or do I just have to guess that maybe you suck at shooting and you're grouping an inch and a half low left?
There's that.
To be an instructor and have some guy tell you, well, I'm not sure if it's zero. Well, then I can't tell you anything about your target, because I don't know. You're not going to get anything out of a class. Yeah. So that being said, listen, man, like, I don't know. I've spent a lot of time with LPVOs. I spent the last 5-6 years screwing around with everything on the LPVO spectrum, all the way up to the 1-10. I'm not going to knock them, because they definitely have their place. But what I will say is that I just yanked the last LPVO that I had on a rifle off of this week to put on this higher power scope and turn this into something that's more dedicated. For the sole, truly for me, the one reason was, I don't think I ever dialed them up other than to zero. Like, well, even
you're
shooting
that
distance,
that you use 1x the majority of the time.
99.9% of the time. Shooting to distance for me, and distance for me, and my local range is only 200 yards. And if we're talking engagement distances, even in my neighborhood, 300 yards is stretching it. And I'll grant you if we're talking engagement scenarios, yes, it will give me probably a better ability to PID something, but we're talking about situations that are so vanishingly rare
Yeah,
it's really hard for me to even consider it.
I feel like if a civilian is shooting another person at 300 yards, you're probably going to go to jail, right? Isn't a threat. So
in my world, if I'm shooting someone if I'm shooting someone past 300 yards in my world, it means that there is no law anymore and the end of the world has come. And because I mean, that truly is the only reason why I'd be doing it. So all of that aside, I only really shot them in one power, and they all suck at one power. I mean, everybody talks about like, this is as close to true one as you can get. Yeah, well, a red dot is true one. So
right.
Why am I dicking around?
There's two. There's two. In my opinion, there's two LPVOs that I would even consider looking at, right? The first one is a Collis K16i, right? The 1X on that, amazing, right? The SM1 reticle, very, very good for an LPVO type of reticle. It's daytime bright. The neat thing about that reticle is it's like an EOTech. It's also second focal plane, which is really nice. It's not a first focal plane. So the glass, like you have less glass in the scope because it's a second focal plane. So you get daytime bright reticle. It is a bright scope, again, because it's second focal plane. The neat thing about the reticle being an EOTech reticle, at the very bottom of the circle is 2.5 mils. So inside the circle gets me out to 400 yards.
Yeah.
So 400 yards on my 12.5-inch gun, my 12.5-inch Hodge, that's 2.5 mils. I'll bang a 6-inch plate all day at 400 yards, right? Outside of that, that's when I start using the reticle. So like for me, well, the other parts of the reticle. So for me, where an LPVO shines is things that are hard to see that might not be that far away.
Yes.
Meaning, like, if I wanted to shoot shit far away, I would use that Night Force in back of you because that's, what, a 3 to 18? Way better for that. To me, it's like LPVO 400 yards and in. Could you do longer? For sure. Is it ideal? Absolutely not. So, like, 400 yards and in, but you're going to be using 1X the majority of the time. So, like, the 1X on it has to be good. The other one is the Vortex 1-6 Razor. Not the 1-10, the 1-6. Daytime bright reticle, second focal plane. It's a completely bomber optic, at least from what I've seen. And either one of those two I would be totally happy with. If you were like a total glass snob, the Collis is unbeatable currently.
Well, and I was, so I have the 1-10, and I know you have beef with the 1-10. I don't hate it as much as you do, but it'll probably go on something again someday. But if we're talking about what I find useful at classes, right? I don't take a lot of, I haven't taken a scoped carbine class since you and I taught intermediate carbine way back in the day. And if I'm going to take one of those, I'll bring this 4-16 Night Force and do that. So when I'm taking a rifle class, I want to be learning how to shoot aggressively. And a lot of that is target transitions and moving my eyes. And the other thing that I found with LPVOs is that getting my eyes outside of that glass and being really aware of where my target focus is and being able to have a lot more situational awareness with what's going on outside of the glass is virtually impossible. The 1X on that Collis may be really great, but it's 1X great when you're standing still.
Even then, I find that like shooting aggressive doubles at like 50, take for instance, right? 40-50 yards, I feel like, by the way, with a rifle, like that's pretty much where people need to stay, right? Like, that's a good area to start figuring out things in terms of marksmanship and being able to like, you know, have a good mount. Anyway, what I see at that distance specifically, 40-50 yards, is my eyes bounce back and forth between the target and the dot, target and the dot. And it's because the optic body is so big, it's hard to see around it or look through it and get your eyes out in front of it like you would on a red dot. And it's significantly easier like on that little red dot that you have there. Which is, I mean, point or something.
This is a Holosun.
A Holosun.
I don't remember what one it is, but one of the higher end Holosuns. But again, I mean, this little guy does a lot for PID and seeing stuff in hard places. I rarely have this. This is my house gun, so it's living on here.
3X magnifier, by the way.
That's right, for people who aren't watching. 3X magnifier, and it's just a, you know, it's the old EOTech G33 or whatever it was. And then a Holosun, you know, aimpoint body style. What I really like about this one and about that SIG is they come with the lens caps, and I'm not real picky about how pristine my lenses stay, but I use it to occlude it. So I actually just have a pasty on this. And then I think the SIG one actually comes with a not transparent lens cap. So I can run an occluded dot, and I do. Like, I run this occluded when I feel like I'm getting lazy. I'll occlude this dot just like I do on a pistol, and find that to be super helpful. So not a super high dollar optic setup compared to the, you know, Night Force and Badger Mount and all that shit back there, but in terms of what I'm getting out of it from training, this is the way to go. I do have, so I've always been a big fan of EOTechs too, and I still am. I think they're pretty great optics. I've got three of them. I've got one on a sub gun and one on a 300 blackout and one on a 10.5, and I like them. I like the reticles. Yep. I like how big the glass is. So that's my only gripe with these kind of aimpoint micro body style optics, is it's not a big window. There isn't a lot of, to your point, there's not a lot of optic body around it. So you can kind of focus it out. But that's, it's not a big window. The EOTech's got a big window, and I like that. But it has more optic body. It also, the battery life sucks ass. I've broken or had more EOTech's break than I've had any other optic break. So, like, I have a hard time defending them, but I really like the size of the window. I really like the reticle. So I still have some of those floating around, but just simple red dots are really,
I agree,
I think, the only way to go for a training gun.
And I think specifically, like, the Holosun red dots, like you have there, whichever one, that I think I have the same one. I wish they didn't have
HS515, it says on the side.
Yep, that's the same one I got then. But like that one and then the SIG one, they're really great. When you stick a magnifier behind it, the cool thing about those optics is you can change the reticle to like a BDC reticle. I'm typically not a BDC fan, but with a magnifier behind it, you can figure out what those holds are, and it becomes like very, very good. You know, and for instance, you know, maybe the third dot down, they're like, hey, this is 300, but it's actually not 300. It's 340 yards. Like that would be homework on the end user's part to figure out like what the holds actually are in that optic. But it becomes very freaking handy with a magnifier behind it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I think we hammered on rifles enough. Pistols, what are we looking for pistols? Pistols, well, to me, are a completely different animal, because you can have an open gun for USPSA, and that thing is still going to move a little bit. So what are we looking for in regards to pistols?
Well, and you talked a little bit about it earlier, right? Like, it's way easier to build a rifle at home. Not a whole lot of home build pistols show up in classes outside of people swapping triggers and people throwing weird shit in internals.
Yeah.
And that's the only time we see stuff fall apart, right? So again, I go back to, so I shoot 90% of my time these days. I mean, I've got a closet full of pistols just like you. I've got SIGs and Staccatos and Glocks. And what I have almost never done to any of my pistols is screw with much of the internals. If I'm going to mess with something internal to this pistol, it'll be trigger, it'll be recoil spring, and like, that's about it.
Yeah.
I may There may be some springs that I'll change here and there in the trigger housing, but even that,
dude,
I really try and stay away from it.
Here's why. Like, and I hear this being said all the time, like, oh, I change out the striker spring and, you know, it only pops my gamer ammo. It won't pop any other ammo. And it's like, man, if you're having malfunctions at a match, you're not doing well. So, like, I would rather have a little bit heavier trigger and a gun that pops all the ammo when I press the trigger. Not right. just, like, specific ammo. Two, like, I don't know, man. Like, I shoot 147 grain minor power factor ammo, like, quite a bit. I don't know what's different about the primers on those than other stuff. Obviously, like, military ball, you know, like, that's going to be harder to pop. But, like, I want mine to pop everything. I want a reliable pistol. And to me, it's like, that's first and foremost. So like, if what you're doing to the gun is making it unreliable with certain types of ammo or certain types of situations, or I got to grip the gun like this and stand on one foot for it to work. Like that's a no go for me. It needs to be reliable. Like if you're going to go take a class, the last thing you want is to be like putzing around with this freaking thing in back while everyone else is like shooting and learning.
Right. Well, the same thing, class, match, shooting on the street. I will sacrifice quite a bit of quote unquote performance, because that's going to be pretty subjective, in order to have a reliable pistol. There are some things that I won't sacrifice because I don't think they actually hurt reliability. And it's, you know, the FUDs would get real mad about me changing my trigger, and the FUDs would get me real mad about me putting an optic on it. There are some things that I will take some risk on, but there's a lot that I just won't. So anyway, what I end up shooting most of the time these days are either the PDP full size 5-inch, and the only thing that I've done to this gun are I put in the performance trigger, and I have the long stroke
guide rod and spring makes it. From ZR Tactical.
Yeah, guide rod and spring. ZR Tactical, that's it. Thank you. Man, we're putting a lot of brands out there for a podcast that isn't sponsored. I hope somebody's listening.
Well, no coupon codes. That's... I'm not a fan of those things.
Yeah. So that's all I did on the PDP.
Yep.
And I run I have an SRO on this gun. I can talk about that in a second too, but... And then my Glock 34, because I found myself, I didn't like the grip circumference on the PDP. I found some stuff that I didn't like about it. I've kind of circled back to it now that I put that long stroke guide run in it. But the 34, the only thing I've done on this is swap the trigger, and I put a bigger mag release on it because the mag release on it was super, super, super stiff. That's all I've done on this gun.
I shot that gun. It's super easy to shoot that 34, you know, like, man, I think people go like, I had a conversation with this guy, the other day, cause he sent me a message and he was like, hey, you shoot a five inch, full size steel frame all the time. Do you carry that? And I'm like, no, of course I don't carry that. Like, that's a humongous gun. And he's like, aren't you afraid that you won't be able to shoot your other gun? And I'm like, no, dude, this is like having the barrel length conversation, right? It doesn't matter. Like, you either have the skills and you can shoot or you can't, right? Now, there are certain times where I feel like, you know, maybe certain people's skills are attached to a specific type of gear, right? Like, if you only shoot that Staccato XC, right? Could you do the same thing with a Glock? Maybe, maybe not. But like, if you're like trying to build a solid set of skills, dude, the freaking gun doesn't matter. Like, I almost like hate that talk anymore. Cause it's like, dude, this is just so dumb.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've shown you that.
Oh no! This podcast just got better. You disappeared. Say, what did you just say? Because you were breaking up.
I said we both shot a lot of pistols.
Yeah,
at the end of the day, I didn't pick the pistol necessarily for the pistol's inherent performance. I was picking something that tailored better to what I liked, what I felt like fit my hands better. There was no, I didn't buy a pistol because I felt like this pistol shoots flatter than the other. It was because like this Glock 34, I can get a lot more. I like it has a super wide grip. I have long ass fingers. It leaves me a little more meat to hold on to.
Sure.
So it's stuff like that where I'll talk about tailoring pistols to how you shoot. But the only, I think the only time that what you were talking about where, you know, skill breaks down is when you start getting into like, if you shoot an open gun, if you shoot a, you know,
sure,
Infinity, that's all the time, and that's all you shoot.
They're very different, which is why I said
very different. Right. Yeah. I don't think you could pick up a Glock 48, you know, super subcompact gun and hammer on it the same way. I think that's where it starts to break down a little bit. But if we're talking, you know, carry optics guns, limited guns, production guns, skills are going to be skills.
Yep.
The only reason I bought a Staccato is because I really like the 1911, 2011 manual of arms. I think it's fun to shoot. It wasn't because I was like, this is going to make me that much of a better shooter. It shoots super flat. Because it's just, you know, you still have to shoot that gun. Like, it doesn't shoot itself. So, I mean, that's, I think we see a lot of people come to classes with guns that, the only time we see guns break down in pistol classes are where people have gone out of their way to try and delete recoil or try and delete something from this gun that they're supposed to be deleting. Try and fix something that they should be fixing with fundamentals. That's the only time we see something break down.
For me, I think some of the best advice we could possibly give the people that are listening is like, if you just signed up for a class or maybe you want to start taking classes and, hey, what pistol should I get? What upgrade should I do? I think the main thing that you need to be thinking about, number one, is the gun needs to be reliable, right? It needs, like we said, it needs to pop all kinds of ammo, unless you just plan on shooting one type of ammo for the rest of your life. That thing needs to work all the time with all different types of ammo. The next thing is it actually needs to fit you. That is a thing, right? If the grip is too small and you have like gigantic hands, it is going to be way harder. Like your shooting experience is going to be significantly harder, right, than a gun that actually fits you. So like Max said, hey, the Glock's a little bit bigger around. I would agree with that. Like maybe it fits his hand a little bit better because he's got bigger hand. I think that another thing that we could definitely touch on really quick is like, I would pick a gun that isn't like off the wall. And it's because like, I would want a gun that is well supported, right?
Yes. Glock,
well supported. CZ Shadow 2, well supported. Staccato, Walther. Like all of these guns, I could find holsters for them. I could find mag pouches for them. But if I get like a HK, I don't even know the models of HK.
I know.
I don't even pay attention. But like I have an
HK. They don't want you to know.
HK 6000, whatever, right? It's like, can you find a holster and a mag pouch for that thing? Probably not. Can you find extra mags for it? Probably not, right?
If you it find takes a new striker, plate, can you find springs?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Can you find extra parts for this thing that you will inevitably need when you start training? And I say inevitably because, dude, stuff does wear out. Springs specifically, right? I think recoil springs are good for what? 10,000 rounds or something? I'm definitely guilty of going way more than that.
The gun gets really soft, so that's nice.
Just beats itself to death. but like this stuff wears out. So like get a platform that is well supported, not just in holsters, but like extra parts as well. And those ones that we just listed there, CZs, Glocks, Walthers, MMPs, well supported. MMP is one that you can buy for like what, $400?
Oh yeah.
So it's like, man, buy two, buy three. Bring all three of them, like set them up the exact same. Like if you can afford it, like that would be what I would do. I'm biased. I like Walther's. I obviously like I get paid by Walther. But I also don't get paid to say nice things. So, like, I dig those things a lot, especially the steel frames. I have three steel frames that are set up the exact same. Same trigger. One has a little bit different optic, but it's more or less very similar. The Vortex optic. Very similar to the 507 comp. But, like, I pick up all three and I'm like, yep, feels like the last one. So I think that's a good idea, too. Like, having several of the exact same thing. This way, if like one breaks, you could set it down, grab another one, and keep going.
Yeah.
If you can afford it. I totally understand that. Like, it's a big upfront cost.
It is. But like, if you're talking about that or all the amount of money that you'd spend putting random shit on your gun, and you know, I sound like a FUD. Yeah. I am not anti-comp. I've got a gun closet full of comp pistols, and I like.
Me too. They're fun. I was shooting one yesterday. Like, it was great.
Yeah.
Yep.
But if I could only have one class pistol, it probably wouldn't be a comp pistol.
Yes. Red dots for pistols. What red dots should we choose? Because I think this is going to kind of go along the same lines of kind of what we've been talking about. Like, hey, first and foremost, it needs to be durable. Right. I do not want this thing breaking. There's a couple that like I would say three that I've really, really come to like. Go ahead. You tell me what yours are. Actually, four. Sorry. There's four that I really.
Well, and again, I think it kind of goes back to, you know, understanding what really matters for what purposes. Right. So. I guess I'll start by saying. I really like shooting a Delta Point Pro, right? Yep. Super big window, small,
it's awesome. Crisp
dot.
It looks beautiful.
It does. If you breathe on it the wrong way, it's probably going to break.
It's going to shit the bed immediately.
So I'm not going to carry a Delta Point Pro.
No way.
I might carry an SRO. I might carry a Holosun. In fact, I do. I carry a Holosun. I carry an SRO. At the end of the day, I can train with a Delta Point Pro and have a backup Delta Point Pro and a backup to the backup Delta Point Pro. I can learn everything I need to learn about shooting a red dot with one of those that, you know, is a little more forgiving on the range. And it's going to transfer to an RMR or something like that. It just makes it a little bit more difficult when you're, you know. So... I'm not knocking any optic, but I've found my happy medium is a Trijicon SRO. I really like shooting it, competing with it, because I think it's got a really big window. It's a good dot. It's got a good glass. Yep. And if I chuck it in the middle of a stage, because I wipe out on gravel, I have a fairly high degree of confidence that it's not going to break. And then I do carry the gun like that, my 5-inch PDP that I'll take to classes, like I've shot competitions with. I'll carry this gun every now and then just for shits and giggles. So, you know, I like this. I do have, I mean, for closed emitters, I it's the Holosun. I wish they didn't have the craziest numbering system for the
508T.
Yeah, that's it.
508T. I like that one as well. That's going to be my favorite closed emitter. I know as soon as I say this, people are going to like shoot us messages, like hate mail. But that optic out of all of the enclosed emitters is like hands down the most durable from what I have seen. Now, someone's going to hit me up and be like, nope, we broke 10 of them. Okay. Like that is not my experience. That optic is super durable from what I have seen. The other enclosed emitters, like the Steiner MPS, I bought a brand new one. It showed up. It's like dead on arrival. I still need to send that thing back. But like just looking at it, like I'm not going to use that thing, man. The window is super tiny. It's a no-go for me. The other one is the Acro and the Acro P2. Hands down, the most broken optic I see in classes. I see windows fall out of these things. I've seen emitters hanging and not attached anymore. Dude, that optic, way overhyped, and like I see it broken all the time. Now, every time I say this online, someone's like, "Well, we have." I had a guy that hit me up, and I forgot who it was, but he was like, "My department has 300, and we've never broken one." And I'm like, "I'm glad, right?" But that has not been my experience. I'm glad yours worked out.
How many rounds has your department fired? Because I know how many rounds most departments fire. So
I don't know. That would have been a good follow-up question. But yeah, I would, just from experience, I would personally stay away from those. The other ones that I like the SRO. I like the Hollow Sun 507 Comp. And then the Vortex, what do they call that thing? The XL?
Yeah, I gotta try one of those. I'm gonna bug Chris for one next weekend.
I'll bring mine to ORD so you could shoot it if you want.
Yeah.
So this was good. I feel like that pretty much sums it up outside of like, hey, bring, you know, loaded magazines to your class. That's always another thing that I feel like is a good idea.
Well,
dude, loaded shit the night before, this way we're not all there like stuffing mags.
I remember my first like professional class. It was with Trek and Solo Defense back in forever ago. And I was so anal retentive. Like, I read all the articles, like, what should you do before class? I showed up, everything was zeroed. I had every mag loaded. I brought way too much shit. I brought like 3 rifles and 4 pistols and all the stuff, knives. But like, I was super conscious of, I don't want to be the one slowing people down. And like, how many times, Nick, have we said, all right, that's the end of our safety brief, let's go down to the line, and guys look at us like, hold on, I still gotta load mags.
I know.
What have we been doing here?
I know. Yes, go load them. Like, have them loaded the night before. It's a good idea.
The only other thing that I think is worth mentioning is, I think a lot of people get really wrapped around the axle around, especially for pistols classes, but rifle classes too, around is like belts and gear and mag carriers and holsters and all of that shit. That for me is one of those where, yeah, there's a bare minimum that you need to have just quality wise, but that's something that you figure out, like you work through what doesn't work for you in classes. Like I think there are things that you absolutely can avoid, and the list is too long to even start with, but I think you really have to figure that out for yourself. If I don't feel comfortable recommending a particular setup, like I have a competition setup and I have a not competition setup, but it's set up for me and how I index mags. And that's all stuff that, like, as long as you can keep mags on your body and it works for you for the class that you're taking, I have a hard time. I mean, you see a lot of it when people post pictures of their, you know, play carriers or their belts on Instagram. People are like, what mag carriers are those, what belt is that, and
I know,
you know, why do you have it set up like this? And I struggle with that, because there's really no, unlike guns, there's really no point of failure there outside of just something that you haven't worked through yourself.
Well, personal, it all comes down to personal preference, and personal preference is built off of your own experiences doing whatever it is that you're doing. So maybe you're shooting USPSA and you want to try a specific type of draw, and you're like, man, if the gun was canted a little bit more like this or that, or if it was up here or down here, whatever, right? Like, it would be easier. That's going to dictate maybe the type of hanger that you get, or maybe the type of holster that you get. Reloads. Like, personally, I don't like doing the whole like having to lean or like break at the wrist, right? Which usually happens when magazines are straight up and down instead of being canted. So I like a canted mag. This way my hand just like falls straight down. I don't have to do any sort of weird mechanics. I wouldn't have learned the type of cant or the amount of cant that I prefer if I didn't actually go out and experience it. So I'm with you. I hesitate to tell people exactly how to set up their belt just because it is so personal. Like, there's maybe a baseline. Maybe if you started off with like a freaking Safariland UBL, right? With a, which is a hanger, right? Put Safariland forks on it. This way you could switch your holsters back and forth. There's actually a couple companies, RDR Gear. They make a UBL type thing where you can cant the gun and have a little bit more modularity. RDR Gear makes that. That's pretty freaking cool. So like maybe you want to start off with that. This way you can kind of configure it the way that you want. I would also recommend just doing like regular Kydex pouches. Ones, yeah. Like my favorite here lately is the TXC pouches. And the reason is because of how modular they are, and you could like turn them. Like if you look at the back of them, the way that they're cut is like super genius, like half moons. And man, you could turn this thing however you want. It's perfect. It'll go on, again, Safariland forks, or it'll go on the Tech Logs. There's a couple other Safariland clips that it'll go on. But the reason that I would recommend a Kydex pouch, if you get like a CR Speed or some like the other gamer pouches, dude, those things are not meant to be like, hey, I'm shooting rifle and then I'm going to like drop down to prone.
No. Yeah.
It's going to break. And so like I've broken so many of them. Like I just get tired of, cause like I go back and forth between pistol and rifle like quite a bit. And so like, you know, I want to be able to like jump down the prone and like the thing just doesn't break. So I've gotten to where, yep, those, I broke those. There's I actually have JB Weld holding it together.
They're like, they're great on this super specific, wear this for a competition or a super specific class. But like, and I don't know, I might get yelled at for two, a cheese dick. I mean, like they don't feel like I feel like I will break this. So I will not wear this belt for anything other than super specific purposes. Yep. I have T-Rex arms and Safariland Kydex mag carriers and everything else because I know I can lay on it and it's not going to break. I mean, that's really it, man. And then, I mean, yeah, I started with Safariland hangers and clips and stuff, and that's just what I've stuck with. And I don't know. That's one where it is completely personal preference. I do. The only thing, I'll echo what you said. Even back in the day, like I had the, I don't remember the company that even made them that had the elastic bands on the side. And it was just the piece of, they're essentially
HSGI.
Essentially fabric. Yeah. HSGI. And I don't know, putting mags back in it was a pain in the butt. Indexing mags out of it because they were so tall was a pain in the butt. But again, if that's something, you know, we get a lot of cops in classes who, some of them we've even had come in with like the Velcro or clips, snaps on their mag carriers because that's what they have to have. And so that's why, like, I'm not going to dictate that stuff because that's a training thing, right? Train to whatever the equipment you have is and buy the equipment that you think helps you train the best. I can say with 100% confidence, I've never seen somebody's belt fail in a class. Seen a lot of guns fail. I've never seen somebody's belt fail in a class. So it might slow you down and you might learn something about your gear in the class, but I don't think it's going to be a failure point. So yeah, buy quality and then, you know, figure out what works for you.
Yeah. Max, I think what we're saying here is don't buy a bunch of horse shit that isn't going to work. Right.
We all have boxes of holsters.
Oh yeah. No, I have a massive box. I actually was looking in it the other day and I was like, I should just like chuck this thing, man. It's just taking up space. But anyway, like I feel like the reoccurring theme here is you need to pick gear that is going to be durable, number one. And number two, it's going to fit you and the type of shooting that you want to go do.
That's
right. But durable, well-supported, and the type of gear that fits you, your body type, and the type of shooting that you want to do. And I think that you'd be a whole lot better off rather than doing something like, oh, I'm gonna get this, you know, PSA lower with a Bear Creek upper, and I'm going to put a 3 to 18 on it and an offset dot, and I'm going to use the offset dot for, like, you know, the main optic, and then 3 to 18 for that's my long range. Like, dude, no, no. Like, spend the money on a decent rifle right? Modern material makes great rifles at a very affordable price, in my opinion. The one that I have is, dude, that thing, it's bulletproof for what it is.
Yeah.
I think those things are like $1,600, and it is a great rifle out of the box. Comes with a lot of like upgraded things that, again, are really good. If you wanted to go a little bit like even higher than that, you could do a Hodge. I love Hodge guns. It's hands down my favorite rifle to shoot. But yeah, there's a lot of like in between rifles, BCM, Noveski, like there's a lot of like really good ones in between there that, you know, maybe you save up a little bit of money, you buy that and you'll be good to go. And it'll just cause you a whole lot less heartache. Same exact thing with pistols. Do you have to spend a lot of money on pistols? No. But like, say your budget for pistols was $2,000. I would probably buy two pistols, maybe three if I can get away with it, and buy a pile of magazines for those things.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's the smart thing to do.
Magazines. And so, I mean, that's what, yeah, I'd buy two Glocks, I'd buy a bunch of mags, and then I'd buy a bunch of high end mag extensions and then be done with it.
Yep. Yep. And I mean, you're set for a very long time.
Yeah. I used to be a, you know, home build your rifle guy. I mean, that was the whole, like, I loved doing it. Like, it's super fun to build guns at home. Sure. But I have become much more of a fan of, like I said, at least for the upper, buy some off the shelf. Buy a decent brand. And again, we'll get, you know, my PSA has shot lights out, and that is probably true. It's just that it's every fifth one shoots lights out and the other four don't. Even if it's the other way, you know, even if it's every fifth one sucks, it's a QA thing. I mean, I'm in manufacturing, I know about this shit. It's just a QA thing. So your chances of getting a higher quality are better if you just spend a little bit more money. And you're not gonna have it fall apart.
I agree. Yeah, so I would stick with the type of gear that we mentioned, the type of red dots, type of pistols, rifles, cases. Yeah, this was good. Hopefully this helps you guys out in terms of like, hey, what should I buy? I want to go take a class. I want to go shoot a match, whatever. What should I buy? Like, what is good gear to buy? Because like we said, you know, both of us have like big ass boxes, like full of gear. And at the end of the day, it was just a waste of money because I found out like, nope, this is not fitting the thing that I am trying to get it to fit into.
Yeah.
So hopefully this was informative for everyone to listen to. If you've made it this far, you should go to our website, www.veloxtraininggroup.com. Click the register button. When you click that button, you can see where we will be at throughout the year. If you do not see me in a spot that you would like me or both of us to come to, shoot me an email, info@veloxtraininggroup.com. Anyone can host. It's a little bit of work on the host part to set up the class with the range and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, the host gets a free spot. So if you would like to host me for next year, please shoot me an email. There are very limited spots left, actually. I think I might only have like two or three weekends left. Unless it's like a department where, you know, we do during the week, I could do those. But most of the weekends for next year are pretty booked. But again, if you want to see me in a spot that I'm not currently at, shoot me an email and I will get there. All right.
Cool.
This is good.
I will see you. Yeah, I will see you next weekend, man. And we'll see folks at ORD.
ORD. See you guys there. I'll drop this podcast tomorrow. It's it's the 23rd. I will drop it on the 24th. So it'll be out for you guys that are driving to ORD. Listen to this and, yeah, man, come say hi to us when you're at ORD.
Ooh.
All right. Next time.
See ya.